And a very good evening to you. How you doing this Monday? This Monday, the 1st of March, 2021. Glorious day it's been here in the northwest in Salford. And I'm reliably informed it's been that way. Most of the UK has been blanketed in sunshine today. First programme of the week. Two brilliant guests lined up for you between now and 7 o'clock. It is the Richie Allen Radio Show and it begins now.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, my mate Jackie Devoy is a brilliant journalist. She's written a piece in The Mail that you really have to read to believe. And it's about Oriana Crisiulo. I hope I pronounced that right. We'll ask her herself in about 25 minutes' time. Oriana is from Stockport and she tried to visit her father at Tillio in the care home at Bamford Grange where he's staying at the moment. But was told she couldn't even wave at him or wave to him through the window of the care home. Staff there telling her that was in fact illegal. Great story by Jackie. Oriana Crisiulo joins the program this hour. And in the second hour of the program, Mark Collett returns to the show. It's been ages since Mark was on. Mark, well, he's a controversial figure, the author of The Fall of Western Man. He's a British nationalist and he heads up the group Patriotic Alternative. It's an activist group. Looking forward to catching up with Mark Collett in the second hour of the programme. And as usual, if you'd like to tweet to me, you can do so via the medium of Twitter. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. And it's Monday's programme. How are you doing, by the way, eh? Are you well? Are you in good form? Are you enjoying the sunshine? Are you able to get out and about in it? Or are you stuck indoors working well? Ah, well, you can't have it all, can you? Can you? Lots to do now in the first half an hour, so let's just get on with it. The Brazilian variant is all the rage. Are you following this, Yar? The Brazilian variant. All this panic. A manhunt. There's a manhunt going on because of the Brazilian variant. And I'm told on Twitter by people who I know that the Brazilians in Brazil, Brazil is a country in South America, you probably know that. The Brazilians are not aware of this Brazilian variant. What? First we heard of it. But apparently a person who was infected with the Brazilian variant, known as the P1 variant, has gone missing. And Boris Johnson said there is a massive effort underway to catch the bugger and do God knows what with him or her. The missing person infected with the variant is understood to have used a home testing kit, but they did not complete their registration form properly. So there has been an appeal. The goons, and they are goons, Nadeem Zahawi, the vaccine minister, Matt Hancock, the health secretary, proper goons, not a brain cell between the two of them. They've been on television today, and I believe that Matt Hancock is on television right now, appealing to people who haven't had their test back, if they were tested on the 12th or the 13th of February. If you haven't had your test come back, come forward immediately. Ring 119. Ring 119. Here's the Prime Minister.
We've got one of the toughest border regimes anywhere in the world for stopping people coming into this country who may have variants of concern. And if you look at what we've done in the case of the South African variant, a massive effort went in there. And is the same is going on now to contain any spread of the Brazilian variant. I should just say to anybody who is concerned that a couple of things. First of all, we have no reason not to think that our vaccines are effective against these variants of concern at the present time. So, people should take that as some evidence of confidence. And then also listen to what Public Health England are also saying. They don't think that there is a threat to the wider public. But obviously, we are continuing to do everything we can to stop variants coming in at our borders. That's why we've got a tough regime.
Yeah. Are you worried about the Brazilian variant, dear listener? Do you have it? Is it you? It could be you.
Did you do it?
Is it you?
Did you do it? Did you do it?
Yeah, it's you, isn't it? I know it's you, you bastard. You Baxter, you boisterous Baxter, Baxter with the Brazilian variant. It is you. Oh, good God. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of the variant, and we will speak about it for another couple of moments anyway, we might have to go backwards in the future. Back to restrictions, according to Professor Graham Medley. Graham Medley is on the SAGE group. That's the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies. They're advising the government. Here he is on BBC Radio 4 this morning talking about the possibility of having to go backwards.
Well, I think it is a variant of concern, but we are going to be faced with these in the next 6 months. You know, as we move towards relaxing measures, then there are going to be challenges on the way. There is always a risk that we might have to go backwards, and that's what nobody wants to do, is to actually open up and then have to close down again. So monitoring these variants, keeping an eye on in terms of what they actually do. So sequencing, for example, viruses in hospitals, I think, is a crucial step to know whether or not the virus, this variant and other variants in the future, are what impact they're actually having.
Yeah, there's going to be loads of variants in the future. Don't worry about that. There'll be lots of variants, lots and lots of varieties of COVID coming soon. Hey, listen, should we be opening up to visitors in the summer then with their dirty, rotten variants? Should we? Should we even be going on our holidays taking our dirty, rotten Kent variant with us, Graham Medley?
Well, so this is a global problem. And it's of course, our government can make decisions about what happens in the United Kingdom, but they can't make decisions about what happens globally. But they can decide to the extent to which we have transmission crossing borders. And I think, you know, it's a risk. And the government has to play off the risks of new variants arising somewhere else and then coming here against the harms caused by lockdown and caused by restrictions.
Mm. Yeah. Listen, you can check out any time. That was Brexit, wasn't it? That was Brexit. Did you see the opinion piece in the Times today by Claire Foges? Foggies, we would have said, F-O-G-E-S, Claire Foges. The headline was, or is, Vaccine Certificates Are Vital Step to Freedom. The subheading is, We shouldn't let the selfishness or the ignorance of the few impinge on the rights and safety of the vaccinated majority. Yes. She goes on to talk about how the Queen is lovely. The Queen. Her Majesty the Queen is a master of understatement, says Claire Foges. She said that Niagara Falls is probably very damp. Yeah, she's funny. And then Foges said that when asked about the COVID vaccination programme, the Queen suggested citizens should think about other people rather than themselves. Though every utterance from the royal lips is diplomatic, one senses a twinge of frustration at the vaccine refuseniks who plan to free ride their way out of the pandemic on the back of the jab taking majority. That's how Claire Foges in the Times sees you and me, because I presume that, just like me, you've got no intention of taking a toxic tidal wave of pus, piss and shit that has been untested, untried, brand new technology. You're not going to have it, I'm not going to have it. So according to Claire Foges, we plan to free ride our way on the backs of the jab-taking majority. That's what we're like. We're freeloaders. The Queen is right to express herself in a reasonable, polite way, and this must be a reasonable, polite approach, says Claire Foges. Listen to the approach. We ask all to be vaccinated. Provide the reluctant with extra reassurance. Request that they act in the interests of wider society as well as themselves. And if they still refuse to be jabbed, as is their right, refuse them entry to various shops, sporting events, music concerts and hospitality venues. Such a scheme would minimise the risk that the unvaccinated by choice pose to the vaccinated, and hopefully would encourage many to rethink their refusal and thus strengthen our defences against the virus and its possible mutation. That old chestnut, that old bullshit. You could fertilise the lawn with that one, that the unvaccinated represents some sort of threat to the vaccinated. She says this is true because the vaccine isn't a 100% guarantee against the virus. Well, why take the feckin' thing then, Claire? And she goes on in four more paragraphs to say that we should have the vaccine. It's your duty, your moral duty to your fellow citizens. to free us all from this prison that the virus has put us into. Not Boris Johnson and Tweedledum and Tweedledee, Witty and Valance, and all those other goons, muppets and morons, liars. Right, not them. No, it's the virus, apparently, that we need to liberate ourselves from. Nick Ferrari is a radio host, and he presents for LBC Radio. All right, global. The global-owned radio station LBC. This morning, he had a conversation with a refusenik called Kemar. Good name, that, Kemar. Here's Nick Ferrari and Kemar.
I don't drive, no.
Oh, just when you get in a car, do you wear a seatbelt, or do you have to have an accident first before you would put on a seatbelt? I just wondered.
No, obviously not. That's a very different matter. Mm.
Do you not think, though, of course, you could have it and not show signs and be passing it to other people? You're aware of that?
I know they say that. I don't believe in that. I have regular tests for work, so I know I've not got it.
Right. What is it that you do? What sort of job?
Me, I'm in construction. Well, it's logistics, actually.
Okay. And you don't think that for your colleagues, the guys and women who are working with you, and I don't know whether you get to work on a bus or a train or whatever you do, you don't just think for the safety of everyone else you should have it?
For the safety of everyone else?
Mm.
Not really. That was my point. So if you're going to get the vaccine, or anyone's going to get the vaccine, they've got no need to worry about anyone else not getting it.
Yeah, but hold on.
You're covered.
If we all took that attitude, no one would get the vaccine.
No, that's not true, because some people are willing to get it and some aren't.
Right.
Some people are dying to get the vaccine.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there'll always be some with it and some without.
Do you not have concern? Do you have any elderly relatives?
I do.
Are you concerned about grandma and granddad?
Oh, Jesus, huh?
No, not if they want to go and get the vaccine, they're fine.
Are you not concerned for their health, the fact that it has, of course, targeted older people?
No, I'm not really concerned. They're still fine at the moment.
Have they
some
had
are getting their vaccine?
Have they
some
had?
Aren't.
Yeah. Have your grandparents had the vaccine?
I believe my nan has. Yes.
Right. But don't you think that's great news?
Yeah, that's great. That's great for her. If that's what she wanted and she got it, then I'm happy for her.
And mum and dad, are they going to get it?
Well, my mum, yeah, she's waiting to, because she works in a school.
Right.
So she's actually trying to speed up the process of her getting one.
Right. What would it take to make you take the vaccine?
This is where it goes south.
Suppose
if
your employer
means I can
was
go
to
on
say,
holiday, that's the only thing. If I can't go fly out of this country without a vaccine, then I'll take the vaccine.
So if you can't have a holiday this summer, then you'd get the jab.
That's it, literally. That's the only reason.
What about if I told you you can't come to work anymore, Kemar, because I'm afraid no jab, no job?
But they're not going to say that. Because we're already working within close
proximity. Not currently, but I'm just trying to work out what it would take. So you'll do it to have a holiday, which is... I'm just interested in why it is. But what about if you weren't able to earn?
Well, if it did get to that extent, then I'm sure I'm going to have the vaccine, aren't I? Because nobody can't not earn.
No, I agree with you.
Sure, they're not going to do that then.
Right.
You can't... That's against our rights, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they might do. You know, the no jab, no job thing is growing... It's growing in popularity. Well, it is if you believe the phone-in shows done, or the phone-in shows that we hear on the usual suspects, BBC, Radio 5 Live and LBC and Talk Radio. And that, right, it's coming up for 30. It is 13 minutes past the hour. It is 13 minutes past 5. Monday's programme, March 1st, kind of spring, isn't it? Can we say spring? Can we say spring now? Listen, I don't know. We should keep, as best as we can, we should keep this in... We should keep talking about this as best as we can. What exactly? Well, Bell Mooney in the Daily Mail. Because last Saturday, or a week last Saturday, I should say, Bell Mooney had a very important article in the Daily Mail. Her dad was 99 when he died. God love him. And he had dementia and chronic pulmonary obstructive disease, or COPD, as it's known. Coronavirus didn't kill him, but he was listed as having died of coronavirus. And she took umbrage at that, did Bell Mooney, as well she might. And when that article was published by the Mail, she was inundated by people contacting her, more than 100 by last Saturday, that Saturday just gone, but it may be many more now, saying that they're equally concerned that their loved ones were listed as having died of coronavirus, when in fact they were gravely ill with other things. We need to keep talking about this now, because some MPs like Paul Bristow, the Tory, Leila Moran, Moran, forget this Moran garbage, it's Moran, it'll always be Moran. Leila Moran, the Lib Dem MP, she chairs the all-party parliamentary group on coronavirus even. They want an inquiry. They want an inquiry. And a funeral director based in the Northwest said the overcounting of coronavirus deaths is a national scandal. The whole story basically is hanging by a thread. You know this, I know this. It is garbage. It is nonsense. Did any of the UK's radio programmes or TV programmes this morning, they might do it tomorrow, but I doubt it, did any of them pick up on the Daily Mail story? Not a single one did. Not one. Moran has said the government should call a public inquiry into the handling of the pandemic immediately, with an interim investigation into all COVID deaths that should report as soon as possible. Peter Hitchens has lost a lot of fans, a lot of followers apparently. The Daily Mail columnist, or the Mail on Sunday columnist, posted an article, or he wrote an article, and he posted some photographs of him receiving the vaccine. He had the vaccine, did Hitch, and he's pissed off. Here he is today speaking with Micah Graham on Talk Radio. Hitchens is properly cheesed off that over the course of the scam, he's not had any support really from other journalists. Peter Hitchens on Talk Radio with Micah Graham this morning.
I don't think that there has been sufficient resistance at a time when it could have been any good. People wake up now and say, oh gosh, this is all a terrible mistake. Where were they? Particularly in my own trade, but in general, where were they in the months of March, April, May and June, where were they in Parliament in the law when some difference could have been made and this could have been stopped? They weren't anywhere to be seen. Instead of turning on me now and saying, look, actually, we have failed. I didn't fail. I kept on until, but I'm just not going to pretend that you can carry on and on fighting a battle with nobody behind you against an enormously powerful, immensely rich enemy who simply turns a steamroller on you. I've been steamrolled. It's an experience I'm horribly used to. I recognize it. I've been steamrolled because I always give this example. There are people in this country whose word is taken very not like me. There are people in this country, commentators, who instantly, if they take up a cause, attract a powerful following. And I would name among two of those, Douglas Murray and Charles, now Lord Moore. And those were voices which, in my view, if they'd spoken out against this, could have changed the whole tendency of things. But among so many others, they didn't. They looked on as spectators. They didn't see it as their cause. I think the failure of people in that sector of the commentariat to stand out against this is one of the reasons why we've actually got nowhere, despite having by far the better case. You don't always win by having the better case, especially when you're up against propaganda financed by huge quantities of taxpayers' money.
And
deployed against you by very, very skilled spin merchants, as it has been.
My great friend Jean-Anne Crowley, I mention her often for very good reason. She tells me that RTE Radio and RTE Television, that's a national broadcaster in Ireland, very similar to what we heard from Nick Ferrari on LBC. And tomorrow, a lovely lady called Jean Murray, whom I know through Twitter and writes a very good blog, does Jean. Jean is in Dublin. She'll be on this programme with me tomorrow. Got some terrific guests this week. Spiro Skouras back on the programme as well. It's all happening on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford, where it's gorgeous. It's just gorgeous today. Lovely. Right, let's swiftly move on. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, is giving a briefing. Well, he's leading a briefing at Downing Street this afternoon, flanked by one or two, usually two, of a group of about 10. They pick two out of a 10, out of a bunch of 10 goons, usually, don't they? It's Susan Hopkins, isn't it? Or it's Whitty or Vallance or the head of NHS England, the usual morons. Apparently, they're discussing the danger of the Brazilian variant. I'm nobody important, you know that. I don't have any special intelligence, you know that as well. But didn't we say this, didn't we? that it would be Brazilian variants, didn't we? And Macroom variants and County Kerry variants, didn't we? And Timbuktu variants. And then each variant would represent a serious threat because each variant would be more transmissible than the previous one and therefore, of course, more dangerous to granny and granddad. They're ramping it up. Now, the schools will begin returning in the UK next Monday, which is March 8th. And we learned last week, didn't we? We learned, and we were very happy about this, that schools couldn't compel secondary schools now. We learned that secondary schools could not compel secondary students to wear masks in the classroom. Classrooms, that's what we learned. And we learned that it could not be compulsory, it shouldn't be, and it wasn't compulsory, that they take 2 lateral flow COVID tests a week. This is madness, all of this. You know this, I know this. When confronted with whether or not this was legal last week, various government ministers acknowledged and admitted that, well, no, it isn't. It isn't. It's advisory. Something might have changed, though. Now, I don't know if it has changed or not, but just before coming on air, I haven't had too much time, you see, to look into this, but just before coming on air, George Budd, the principal of Moreton Hall. Now, Moreton Hall is a school for posh boys, and maybe posh girls too, I don't know. It's an exclusive school anyway. It has some boarders and it has some day pupils. Now, George Budd was on Sky News this afternoon with Sarah Hewson. And apparently the guidance on whether the secondary school students should or shouldn't wear these masks and all of that and the flow tests, it has changed a bit. You'll hear the presenter first, then you'll hear George Budd.
And George, what about the face part of this, the wearing of masks? Updated guidance on that as well?
Yeah, so we've had updated guidance that primary school teachers and secondary school teachers and pupils should be wearing face masks in lessons. We've made that optional for all of those people right back to the start of the pandemic, really. We sort of made a call when we came back in September that would be something we would offer. And, you know, many pupils and staff have been doing that already. And I suppose, you know, it's akin to the testing, really. We've already had a bit of a soft launch, as you described it, with face masks in classrooms. And I think that will, you know, that will carry on. Clearly, in lessons like PE, one can't sort of run around playing sport in a face mask all that easily, so they won't be needed there. And likewise, you know, things like music lessons and that sort of thing, there'll be occasions where we won't need to wear them. And for our staff, again, it's just an extra layer of reassurance that, you know, that the schools are doing all they can to keep safe. Although, yeah, of course, I was very reassured to read today that rates of COVID transmission are no higher in school staff than in any other part of the population. So, you know, again, for me, that gives me real confidence that it is safe to open schools.
Right. So the guidance has changed, but I can't find out anything. I will, though, inevitably later on, after this programme has concluded, I will try and dig down into it. Last week, presenters like Julia Hartley-Brewer on Talk Radio, and even a presenter on Radio 5 Live, did manage to get government ministers to concede that this could not be forced on children. Now they're saying that, well, guidance has changed. We'll have to wait and see, won't we? Won't we? It's 22 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show. If you've just recently found the programme, how are you? You're very welcome. Do catch up with previous episodes via your podcast host, not your podcast host, whichever platform you use for your podcasts. You will probably find the Richie Allen Show there. And if you do, you'll find episodes going back 4, 5, 6 years on any subject you can care to mention. The programme is archived on podomatic.com. Richie Allen Show there, you'll find it. iTunes, Spotify and all the rest of it. A very interesting interview Julia Hartley-Brewer had today with the comedian Andrew Doyle. Now, Andrew Doyle has written a book about free speech. In fact, it's called Free Speech and War. Why It Matters. And you'll hear him here talking a little bit about his book, and he makes some very interesting points. Andrew Doyle.
This was the reason why I wanted the book to be concise and to the point, because I think a lot of people have forgotten the fundamental premises of free speech and why it is so important. And people are incredibly flippant about it, and they don't seem to mind that you have people pushing for harder hate speech laws that would curb basic freedoms, that we have no platforming at universities, that we have big tech attempting to censor left, right and center, all of this stuff. And as you say, This is something that sort of underpins everything that we talk about, because without freedom of speech, we don't have any other liberties at all. And I fear that people have lost sight of that. And as a result, I really wanted to get to the hub of this and open up the conversation.
And I think the really, really worrying thing is how many people don't realise how important free speech is, and that it's something that has to be fought for, perhaps afresh by every new generation. And how it's interesting now, it's almost become a battle between the left and the right, whether it's about, as you say, big tech censorship of, say, Donald Trump, a man for whom you and I certainly do not hold a candle, whether it's what's happening in universities, whether it's over J.K. Rowling and people attempt to cancel her and sort of, oh, don't publish her books and the like because she has spoken out for women's rights and has been accused of transphobia, having never uttered a transphobic word in or written a transphobic tweet in her life. And it ends up being what seems to be a battle between left and right, whereas free speech should be something that everyone from every corner of the political spectrum should be always in favour of.
Absolutely. I make this point very clearly that it is nothing to do with left and right, really, and it should be something, it should be a non-partisan principle. But like I point out, I remember when I was a kid, and you remember as well, a couple of decades ago, it was mostly right-wing tabloids and right-wing commentators who were pushing for censorship of the arts, who were saying, we need to ban this film, we need to ban this TV programme. You think of the old Mary Whitehouse clean-up TV campaigns and stuff. All of that is coming from the left, but a particular kind of left now. It's a sort of identity of obsessed social justice left, and what they tend to do, which is what is particularly disturbing, is they claim to be on the side of the angels, and they use the language of progressivism to actually mask very regressive ideas. And what they'll say, for instance, is they'll carve out exceptions within free speech and they'll call it hate. You just mentioned J.K. Rowling. They'll say, well, she's a transphobe, therefore she doesn't have shouldn't have the same rights as everyone else. Of course, they're not using these words accurately. So the people that they call transphobe, Nazi, fascist, whatever, hateful in particular, are often nothing of the kind. Now, it is perfectly possible that those people do exist. There are horrible, nasty, hateful, racists, bigots, etc. But 9 times out of 10, those phrases are used in such a way that they don't simply apply in that way. And it's just a way to sort of say, actually, we'll call it hate speech, because what it really is speech that we hate.
Yeah, very good stuff, Andrew Doyle, on Julia Hartley Brewer's programme on Talk Radio. It is 26 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock. This is your Richie Allen radio show, the beginning of the week. Lots to get through. And my good friend Paul Ripley from Fab Radio, and Fab Radio 2, was with me today, working, beavering away. And we're getting there, we're getting there. We might have even gotten there, I don't know. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. If you'd like to say anything, I will read out your tweets. Hi to Shasta Sharon. How you doing, Sharon? Richie, the government recommends face coverings in the classroom, in secondary schools and colleges, but hasn't mandated them. Though I think most schools are asking students to wear them, at least until the Easter halls. The lateral flow tests are voluntary. Well said, Sharon. And Charlie Stevenson, who of course has got a dog in this fight, as he told us on the last phone-in programme. Charlie has just tweeted me a link to the gov.uk website, Safe Working in Education, Childcare and Children's... Oh, Richie, what is it? Safe Working in Education, Childcare and Children's Social Care Settings. It hasn't been mandated. The guidance may have been updated somewhat, but it is not mandatory. So if you're a parent and you do have a secondary school child, if you have a child going to a secondary school and you are worried about this, don't panic. They cannot mandate it. And as the various ministers appearing on UK radio last week stated, no school has the right to send home a child who doesn't want to wear a mask in a classroom. And they cannot refuse a child because the child hasn't taken one of these ridiculous lateral flow tests. All right, all right. 28 minutes past five. I'm going to get my first guest on the programme. While I do that, it's music from the Duke, David Bowie, and Changes. Lovely to be with you this Monday. I hope you're listening to me and you're not basking in the sunshine, or maybe you're doing both. Maybe you're doing both, I don't know. Bowie and Changes, back with my first guest. Don't forget Mark Collett a bit later on as well. But I can trace David Bowie and Changes on the Richie Allen Radio Show, 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Let me read you a couple of paragraphs from my friend Jackie Devoy in today's Daily Mail. A woman has revealed she was left devastated after she was told waving to her 80-year-old father through his care home window was illegal by staff. Oriana Crisciullo from Stockport wanted to drop off some treats for her father Attilio, who suffers from Parkinson's disease and dementia, at Bamford Grange care home earlier this month. But after handing over the supplies to the carer at the front door, she said she was going to pop over to her dad's window to wave at him, but claims she was told it would be illegal to do so. She was stunned, then attempted to walk over to her father's ground floor window, only to find the curtains had been shut, despite it being the middle of the day. And I'm glad to say that Oriana joins me even live on the programme now. Oriana, hi, and a thousand apologies if I've butchered your name, have I? I probably have.
Hi, no, it's fine. It's Oriana Crisciullo.
Oriana Crisciullo.
Fantastic.
It's Italian, is it? It's Italian.
Yes, it's Italian, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely name. This is an absolutely mad story. Take us back to this from the very beginning. You go to see your dad in the care home. You've got some treats. They presumably take them from you, or they tell you that he can't have those treats at the moment because he's got dietary issues. And then they tell you that waving to him through his window is illegal.
Yeah, I mean, I've been dropping off food and bits for him, and we're told to drop off clothes and toiletries and things like that when he needs them. And I drop him off a lot of chocolate and bits and bobs. I know he's got special dietary requirements, but generally I check with the care home before I bring any meals or anything like that along. So they know what's coming. So I'm a bit shocked at the fact that they still can't seem to tell me what he can eat and what he can't eat, because I've been told he wants Kit Kats and then he doesn't, and it's really confusing.
So they haven't, they haven't told you specifically what the dietary problems are.
I'm still unsure of what his problems are, because his dietary requirements are. I know he's got issues with needing thickened fluids. I've dropped him off pasta quite a few times. I phone the care home. I tell them in advance I'm dropping off pasta. Is that okay? What time shall I bring it? And the pasta goes in, and now they've told me that he's not allowed to eat pasta. So I don't know what's happened to it.
So you don't know what's happening to him. When I read the story today, I know Jackie, she's a great writer, Jackie, great reporter, and diligent, you know, in her work. And
yes.
I'm like, wow, Jackie. I mean, is this real? Is Oriana exaggerating? But you're not exaggerating, because the care home has said they're going to investigate it. Yeah.
No, I'm not allowed to wave, and I've had that's been confirmed from Four Seasons, who are the people that run the care home. They have confirmed today that waving at windows is not permitted. I wasn't even asking for a visit. I just wave at the window. I've been doing it for the past year. My dad likes just waving at the window. There's no issues with him getting upset with it or anything else.
Wow. So this is breaking news then. So this afternoon, the Four Seasons Healthcare Group, which runs this home, they have said, yes, you can't wave, or I should say, no, you cannot wave at him through the window. Have they given any reasons?
You're not allowed. They actually contacted Jackie, who wrote the article, not me. And I'm actually quite upset by that. And they've asked her for a prompt and quick response, or some words to that matter. They confirmed that they do not permit window visits. They've asked her for a quick response. Now, I wrote to them last Thursday. I've heard nothing from them. So this isn't about sorting out the issue. This is about minimising their damage.
I can't believe this. I was of the understanding. I mean, first of all, I don't know how difficult it is for people like yourself, and how difficult it has been in the last 12 months that you've not been able to have the physical visit. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to pretend I do understand that. But for many people, the fact that they could go to a window and at least have some type of communication with mum or dad was at least some, even if it was scant consolation, it was consolation. And they're saying no, but they won't give any reasons. I mean, how could that be illegal, or how could it be harmful?
They said their reason was because it wasn't fair on other people that lived there who didn't have rooms on the ground floor.
It's not fair on others who might have room, whose
not
rooms
on the
might
ground
be
floor.
What in terms of that they might see you waving to your dad, and that might that might offend them somehow.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think my dad really talks to anybody there, to be honest, apart from the carers. So I'm not sure that it would even get out that they would know or anything else. And, you know, it's the same as like if your parents live in a bungalow, you can wave at them. So that does that mean you're not allowed to wave to them because some other people's parents live in a flat?
You described this as inhuman to Jackie Devine.
I did, yeah.
It is. I mean, it is. If basically now your dad can't see you. That's how it stands. Yeah. They're saying you obviously can't have. I mean, what has anything changed now that people have been vaccinated, Oriana? I mean, in terms of the physical visits, has anything changed there?
We're allowed to actually, for a while, I'm not sure about now, but for a while we were allowed to go in the home and actually visit our relatives. But the conditions were that we had a COVID test. And then the results would take 3 days to come. And then after the 3 days and the test result, negative test result, we were allowed to go in. Now, personally, that doesn't really fill me with a great sense of safety, because how can a test 3 days before prove anything?
Yeah, I'm gobsmacked here, and I'm getting tweets now from people. I mean, when I tweeted Jackie's story this afternoon, people were gobsmacked by this. They couldn't believe it. You know, saying, yeah. What about his human rights? His rights to, you know, to see you and you know, say hello to you and feel that, you know, love from you. And it's mad. Yeah. And I suppose you must be considering the legal route at this stage, are you?
I am thinking about what to do. My main concerns are, I can sort of understand on some levels that there's just people being given rules and they're busy and they can't understand. But actually, there's been a lot of things out of this. The fact that the care home, I emailed them last Monday. I went in the Thursday before and the Friday. Then I sent them an email on Monday. I heard nothing from them until I complained again to the council on Thursday. And then I got a message confirming that they'd received my email and that I would hear from them within 20 days.
Has your dad had the vaccine or first dose of these vaccines or any of these vaccines?
No, he's not yet. I know some of the care home staff have been vaccinated. My dad hasn't received the vaccine. I have asked them to let me know when the vaccine's being rolled out to their residents. And I haven't heard anything, but I shall be getting that in writing, because obviously I've told them over the phone and now I don't really trust them. So I'm going to have to look at getting him moved or something, because there's a real breach of trust. Also, the council told me, the care home told them, the only reason they closed the curtains was because I was filming. Now, they, either the council are lying or have got something wrong, or the care home are lying. But if the care home really said that, then I am disgusted, because that is an outright lie. I can deal with facts, I can deal with incompetence, but if they're going to lie to me, then I'm seriously, it just undermines any kind of trust.
It's wicked, isn't it? If I mean, as far as the filming goes, there is a video that people can watch. If they go to the Mail Online, look for Jackie's story. It's on, links to it are on my Facebook page and on Twitter as well. But as far as I understand, Oriana, you took out your phone and did the filming after you were told it was illegal to have a window visit. That's when you decided, you know, to, because you were very polite. You speak to a carer and you basically get the confirmation that you can't do that. I don't think you've done anything untoward there. So, I'd be pretty irate.
On the first day, I didn't even have my phone out. There was no need for me to have my phone out. I didn't film anything. And you know what? If the curtains are closed because he's sleeping, that's fine. That's no problem. But then when I went back on Saturday and the curtains were closed in the middle of the day again, and I couldn't speak to him, and the fact that he there have been issues over his weight, I was really worried. I just can't understand how anybody can be so petty and cruel. And okay, it's the rules, but we all have a moral obligation to be decent human beings. And I'm shocked and horrified that one, neither of the two managers, the deputy nor the manager, knew the reasons for this, and that they personally themselves are not questioning a system that doesn't allow people to wave to their relatives.
You, this won't mean anything to you, and nor should it, but I better throw it out there. I'm guessing, Oriana, that many people who run these homes and many of the people who work in them, they don't know whether they're coming or going, do they? From one week to the next, in terms of the government,
sure,
you know?
I'm sure that's the case. I am absolutely sure that's the case. I am. They're probably really overworked. I know they're not allowed to have agency staff in the care home anymore, where my dad is in Bamford Grange. So I'm sure they're really overworked. But at the same time, there's still a moral obligation to let people see their relatives. And they're suggesting to me to get a window visit that I have to book. That means getting my dad out of bed, getting him dressed, putting him in a wheelchair, having a member of staff to do all of that, wheeling halfway around the building to the front door. And then I'm guessing the member of staff needs to stay there with him.
And maybe,
so how is that less work than me just waving through the window, which is what I've been doing for a year?
Yeah, and again, I'm not agreeing with the care home in any way, but maybe if they are short-staffed and if they are overworked, they might say, well, look, we can't release somebody to do that. You know, that could be 25 minutes, mm-hmm. a half an hour, 40 minutes out of our way. Now, it's wrong. I'm not agreeing with it. You should be able to see your mm-hmm. dad. But when you put people under pressure, you know, crazy things happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I do think they're probably under a lot of pressure. And I have every sympathy because most of the staff working on the ground will be working on minimum wage and are probably worried for their own safety.
And you're terrified. I don't want to be putting words in your mouth, not terrified, but you've obviously got real concerns about his well-being. But I'm sure, you know, despite this ludicrous policy of it being illegal to wave at him through his window, I'm sure that inside, you know, they're looking after him as best as they can. I mean, would he see? I don't know very much about care homes. How often would he see a doctor, your dad, do you know?
I know they do. They have done doctor's calls on Zoom. He has occasionally seen a doctor in person, but they generally do things on Zoom, I believe. I know a doctor did come into him, I don't know, sometime over the winter he had at least one doctor's call.
On Zoom, it's not ideal though, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not really. I mean, he's been prescribed antibiotics over Zoom.
What I mean by that is, I know your dad has Parkinson's and dementia. I don't know how advanced that is, but I'm guessing for some seniors who might have Parkinson's or dementia, a Zoom call might be a very confusing thing, Oriana.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, to be honest, he seems to have been okay when I have video called him, and he was okay with that. I don't know. I mean, I just find it really weird that all the care staff can go in there, but the doctors aren't allowed. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, a very good friend of ours, Hayden Hewitt from LiveLeak.com, his mother-in-law, who's not with us anymore, sadly, very difficult situation last year when doctors wouldn't come and see her when she was gravely ill because of these coronavirus protocols. It's crazy. I'm guessing when you went public with this on social media, which prompted Jackie to do the story, which is a very important story, because I'm guessing you got a huge reaction to this, did you? And you're, as far as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not alone. This is happening to a lot of people.
Well, it does make me wonder if this is a blanket policy. I mean, the care home are claiming it's come from the local council, but then they've also confirmed from their head office that it's coming from them, from their press office. So if this is the case all over the country, then I am really horrified that nobody else has spoken about this yet. I mean, there's millions of people working in these environments knowing that this is going on. Why are they not saying anything? Why are the managers not saying anything? They've got a duty of care. These are paying customers, a lot of these people, and they're vulnerable, and the care homes need to be looking after them.
Again, not to be trying to spook you in any way, that's probably the wrong term I've used there, but last year the government handled care homes wretchedly, didn't they? Terribly badly.
Yeah.
People left hospital.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get a choice for my dad to go into the care home. That wasn't our choice. He was in hospital, and basically because of COVID, they put him in the care home, which, you know, at the time I was quite grateful for. But we didn't actually choose to send him there. So, you
explain
know,
that to
that
me, Oriana.
Out of our hands too. And then we've not been able to sort of see him, or, you know, quite often when elderly people have pneumonia, it can bring on symptoms of dementia, and then as they heal from the pneumonia, because he was in hospital with pneumonia, they get better. But because he's had no interaction with his family, he's not had that opportunity to heal in the same way I think he would have had he not been ill and in the care home.
Can you help me understand something here now? This is news to me. So when your dad, when Attilio was in hospital last year, you understood, did you, that he would go home upon leaving hospital?
Well, we weren't sure. We were looking at options. We were looking at options for how to look after him. And he was in a respite care for a while, which was a place to get him back to home. So, you know, the whole the whole thing with I wouldn't have wanted to put him in a home without settling him in and bringing him there and helping him with his staff. And, you know, I mean, he's been confused about why he's ended up there.
God, that can't be easy either. Huh? Can't be easy for him or easy for you.
No, Susan, and I never imagined that he, you know, when he got in there, I was like, oh, great, it's just around the corner, I can go see him and settle him in. And I was really surprised when they wouldn't let us in. But this was obviously, I think this was about the 19th of March or 15th of March or something last year. So we didn't kind of know what was happening at that point.
We've had a tweet from Susan, and Susan quite rightly says she's linked me to the gov.uk website, the government website, where you can see the government's guidelines for visiting care homes. And these guidelines are guidelines. They are, it's guidance for care homes. It isn't the law. And that's a problem for me, that, Oriana. They're leaving it very loose, aren't they, for the people who run these homes?
Yeah, they are actually, yeah.
Because I know that Harriet Harman, the Labour MP and former deputy Labour leader even, was trying to get a bill through Parliament very recently to enshrine in law the right of every care home resident to have a regular visit from one stated family member. And I don't know what's happened with that, to be honest. I don't know. I can't speak to what's happened to that, but I will get on to it. So you're a bit in limbo at the moment now, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know what to say to you. It must be a dreadful situation. Again, I don't understand it. So you might have to go down the legal route, but I suppose in the meantime, you go back to the local authority, do you?
Well, I on the Monday after this all happened on the Thursday and Saturday, I wrote to Bamford Grange. I sent an email. I actually phoned the council and I spoke to the Quality of Care Department, I think they're called, that assess the care home. But firstly, I spoke to the social worker, and then she referred me onto the. And they did get back to me. In all fairness, they got back to me super quick, and I had several conversations. But the council haven't been able to tell me anything, so I emailed the quality care team on Monday and Bamford Grange, and I hadn't heard anything from either back until the Thursday when I phoned up the council, and then they spoke to Bamford Grange, and then Bamford Grange sent me an email.
Oriana, I wish you the very best with it. Again, if I'm in your situation, I'm tearing my hair out. Not that I have much. I don't know what I do in your situation. I suppose the best thing you can do is
know what to do. Because you know, I'm a single parent. I've got two children. My income's been cut by massively this year with COVID. I can't have Airbnb guests, and you know, things are tricky. And you know, I'm looking after my dad. None of my other family are here. They're all in London. So it's a lot to do, and I haven't really. You know, I was kind of waiting for those replies to see where I took it.
Just absolute best of luck with it, right? And I'll stay in touch with Jackie, and hopefully this is resolved very quickly. Your dad has a human right to see you. You've got a human right to see him, and you should be able to see him and speak with him, and if necessary, feed him and chat with him and read to him.
Surely if we visit him at his window, that's a saving for the staff. That's not using up their time that is obviously quite precious to them at the moment.
Oh, you're not alone. Tweets coming in here from people saying, you know, they've experienced this, they're seeing this happen to other people. Thanks for coming on, Oriana. Stay in touch with us, won't you? Let us know what happens. Good luck with it.
It
must be a difficult time for you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for highlighting this, because there must be lots of people having this same problem that they can't wave all over the country.
No doubt you're right. Thanks, Oriana. Oriana Criscuolo there, who's in Stockport, and her father, Attilio, is 80, and he's got dementia and Alzheimer's. And she was told by him that seeing him through his window, spending a bit of time with him through his window, was illegal by staff at that care home there, Bamford Grange in Stockport. It's a care home run by a company called the Four Seasons Healthcare Group. Oriana just said to us in the conversation there, didn't she, that Jackie Devoy, the journalist for The Mail who wrote the story, was contacted by the care home to confirm that the visit, the window visit, the option of standing and waving at your parent has been called illegal by the Four Seasons Healthcare Group. These times are mad. And that's an understatement, I think. Absolutely crazy times, right? Here's music from The Clash on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Back with plenty more after this.
I think my
Rudy can't fail. Look, I see quite a few tweets there about, you know, the inhumanity of the care home workers. It's not always the case. We've had Dean Smith on the programme, who runs a care home. He does it properly. He looks out for his residents. He loves his residents. I reckon in many cases here, it's not that the staff are inhuman morons. You put people under enormous pressure, as this government and the media has done. You lie through your teeth and you tell people that there is a plague going around and it could kill them and everyone they know. This is what is happening to people. You know, I like to see or think the best of people. I don't mean the people in charge, but ordinary men and women like you and me. Ordinary men and women are not evil and they're not inhuman, but they're being put under incredible pressure now. You have to wear masks all the time. Imagine going around a care home and having to wear a mask on your face all day long. How stressful do you think that is? You know you can't take it off because you'll be out of a job or you'll be told not to come back tomorrow. How uncomfortable, how you know, debilitating must that be to have to do? And how must that impact on your ability to do your job? How frustrating must it be? So I'm not, you know, saying ultimately that, you know, I'm not giving a pass to the care home that said to Oriana, you can't go and wave at your dad through his window. That's nonsense, that. That's insane stuff, I agree. But I think you put enough pressure on people and people begin to crack. You know, that's my take on it. That's my, you know, that's what I'm... I've lost the power of speech, to be honest. And I do lose the power of speech at times. You know, I'm going to say, look, not everything is black and white, shades of grey. But for the care home to come back to Jackie later on today and say, look, it is illegal. The window visits are illegal. That's nonsense. It isn't illegal. It's left to the discretion of the individual care homes. As the government website says, clearly, it's guidance, not rules and regulations. And that, of course, is important when thinking about secondary school students going back to school next week and thinking that they must wear masks in classrooms for 8 hours a day. No, they do not. They are not compelled to do that or anything like it. And you should be aware of that. And if you're a parent who's aware of what's going on and you're very, very worried, and you might be very worried about the impact wearing a mask might have on your child, you don't have to do it. They don't have to do it. Force the school to break the law and to exclude your son or daughter. That's what I would do. And I'm usually pretty reticent to be giving anybody any advice. I certainly wouldn't be giving anybody any medical advice because I have no right to do that. I'm not medically trained or qualified to do it. I wouldn't do it. On this, though, on the legal issue or the legal aspect of this, I'm telling you categorically, you do not have to send your child into school with face masks, secondary school students. You don't have to do that. 2 minutes to the top of the hour. Mark Collett, the author of The Fall of Western Man and the man who heads up the activist group Patriotic Alternative, will be on the programme in a few minutes' time. I'm looking forward to catching up with him. It's been a long time. It might be a year or more even, maybe a little bit longer since he was on the programme. I will be inviting Claire from Belfast onto the programme this week. I have yet to make contact with Claire. I will do that tomorrow and we'll have a chat and we'll arrange it. Claire is an economics lecturer. That's the one, Richie. And she came on the phone-in programme and had some very interesting things to say about fiat currency and the collapse of banking. So we'll get her back on the programme because she was very articulate and obviously somebody who she's researched her positions. She knows what she's talking about. We'll get her back on. Spiro Skouras, activistpost.com and Spiro Skouras channel on YouTube. He'll be on the programme this week as well. And a lovely woman called Jean Murray, an Irish lady who blogs. She's a blogger and a very good one too. She'll be on the programme tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. Angela has tweeted me. Angela says, Richie, two nurses went in to see two elderly women today without changing their apron, mask or gloves between appointments or between apartments even. And one took waste to the bin store and went to the second apartment to join his colleague. So much for sanitary behaviour, says Angela. Thank you, Angela. Alan in Liverpool says, Richie, my point was, hang on, Let me scroll back down there. So many tweets coming in, you see. My point was the top management, not those working the shifts in the homes. Thanks, Alan. I didn't even see that tweet, mate, your original tweet, but I get you loud and clear. The top management are inhuman, he says, not those working the shifts in the homes, not those looking after the elderly. I've not met one med pro yet who likes wearing the blue face nappies. They do it because they give a shit, he says, so they follow the rules, looking after ill people. Thank you, Alan. Here is a tune from the Divine Comedy. Why not, eh? It's called National Express, the Richie Allen Radio Show, second hour, Monday's programme, March 1st. Spring is here, I'm declaring it to be true, therefore it must be true. Busy old programme, energetic programme today. Mark Collett is next. Mark Collett even is next. You don't want to miss him, should be very interesting chat over the next 40, 45 minutes or thereabouts. Now, it's been quite a while since my next guest was on the programme, and I'm glad that he's on today and we've got a bit more time than we ordinarily would have. I like him. He's a controversial figure for some people, but I like him anyway. He's a British nationalist, and he's the author of a very interesting book called The Fall of Western Man, which I did read, and I found very interesting. Doesn't matter that I didn't agree with some of it. Who cares? I found some of it very interesting indeed. And these days he heads up the activist group Patriotic Alternative. Now, last November, he was kicked off of Twitter, which is a terrible thing. We should have spoken about that back then. I'm delighted to welcome back to the programme our old friend Mark Collett. Mark, welcome back.
Hello, it's great to be back, Richie. And I can tell you now, you said I've been kicked off Twitter. Well, I've added a few other social networks to that list now.
You're off the old Facebook
Twitter,
too, right?
I am off Facebook, I am off Instagram, and I have been banned off DLive as well. There are numerous so-called activist groups and special interest groups who are now campaigning for me to be taken off every single social network. And in the case of Facebook and Instagram, both myself and Laura Towler were taken off on the same day. And the reason given wasn't that any of our posts had violated any community guidelines, but we were taken off simply because of who we are.
Now, there's no doubt about that. I'm somebody who gets a bit annoyed with independent content creators when they get a bit fond of themselves and when they attempt to be the story rather than the story. That's not the case with you. I mean, you're very, very well known. I mean, you know, every other month for as long as I've known about you, a national newspaper or a television programme has had something to say about you. And you know that here, I'll never take any cheap shots. I'll always ask you whatever I feel like asking you, and I'll give you plenty of room to answer. And we've got loads of time today. Can I ask you this? And I know I did ask you this when we first spoke some years ago now. But when you read stuff, like, I mean, if you... These days, everybody's go-to place to find out something is, sadly, it's Wikipedia, sadly. It's terrible, but that's the way it is. And if somebody wanted to know about you, they would go on to Wikipedia. And the first thing they see is that Mark Adrian Collett is a British neo-Nazi, an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist, and a far-right political activist. And it isn't too long down before you come down the article to find out that counter-terrorism have looked into you and extremism. On a personal level, right? We don't have to bullshit one another here, you and me. We've been around the block too long. On a personal level, how does that make you feel? You have family.
That doesn't bother me. It's not something that bothers me at all, Richie. To be honest, labels being thrown at you isn't what bothers me at all. You can bring me on your show and you can call me anything you want. What bothers me is when I'm not given a right to reply and when I'm kicked off platforms because of labels that have been attached to me, but I haven't broken any of the terms of service or done anything that makes me deserve to be kicked off the platform. Yeah. And I do have red lines. I believe that anybody who is advocating for violence or for acts of terrorism deserves to be dealt with in a sensible but robust manner.
We have laws anyway, don't we, Mark, for things like that, if somebody is doing that?
We do. But I don't believe that people who are advocating for a peaceful resolution or peacefully advocating for what they believe in should be taken off platforms. And people can smear me, they can call me whatever they want, but I should have a right to reply. And as long as I am not inciting violence or calling for criminal acts or terrorism or anything like that, I should be allowed to put over my point of view, and I should have access to the same platforms that everyone else has access to.
You're one of three guests, I think, that when I announce that you're coming on, I get emails about you. I never get emails about other guests, but I do get emails asking me, why would I be giving you airtime or you a platform? And I say to people invariably, look, I've had Mark on before. I like the chap. I like listening to him. Whether I agree with him or not is irrelevant. I like having him on. And I've always been fascinated by people who see the world differently than I do, but even more fascinated by people who keep getting banned and kicked off. I want to get this out of the way, and then I want to move on from it, because we've done this to death before anyway, and I'm not trying to score any points with anybody. But when I was in touch with a journalist from the Times last year, when there was something in the Times about you, and I said, why wouldn't you extend the courtesy, you know, the ethical, it's an ethical courtesy. Any journalist worth his or her salt would phone up the guy that you're going to do a hit piece on and at least give him, as you have already articulated, the right to say, well, look, this is how I see it. And when I said this to this Times writer, whose name escapes me right now, I could find it on the email very quickly. And this writer said, listen, Richie, this is the guy who made statements in the past referring to Africans as AIDS monkeys. However young he might have been when he said that, and even if he's repented and recanted that, the fact is he said it. Why would I need to get right of reply from him? How would you respond to that? Is he there? Is he gone? Have we lost you, Mark?
I think that's a cop-out. I think people deserve a right to reply regardless of who they are. If you're saying something about somebody, and that somebody is a, or anyone, whether they're a public person, whether they're a private person, whether they're in the public sphere or not, everyone deserves a right to reply. And it's shoddy, lazy journalism not to give somebody a right to reply.
I agree.
But it's also completely and utterly unethical. It's as simple as that. And when it comes down to it, there has been robust debate in the country at the moment over whether a particular Islamic girl who left to join ISIS when she was 15 should be allowed to come back in. And that debate continues to this day. Now, do I believe that she has a right to reply in that case? Yes, I believe she has a right to reply. And amazingly, despite the fact that she has not only advocated for terrorism, for murder, and for incredibly violent acts, and not only did she advocate for them, but she fled to another country to join a group that was carrying out those incredibly violent acts in an industrial manner. There was many, many people killed in horrific ways by people who supported ISIS. There are people in this country advocating today for her return, and they are advocating for this. And not only are they advocating, but they are giving her a right of reply. She is constantly being quoted. Yet myself, you might disagree with things I've said now or in the past, but I do not advocate for terrorism.
No.
I do not advocate for violence. I advocate for peaceful change. And I am being given fewer rights, or I am afforded fewer rights, than people who are actively pursuing violence and terrorism.
I've got a different opinion on Begum. So before I give you that, can I ask you honestly, and look, I've never met you, but like I said, I like having you on. I think you're bright and you're articulate and you're a good writer. I see the world differently, but that doesn't matter a damn that I do. Do you regret some of the stuff? Look, I regret some of the things I've said over the years and the way in which I said them. Would you go back to yourself, you know, that old scene in the Shawshank Redemption, you know, what would you say to a young Mark Collett? Would you say, you know, I mean, I don't know why you said that back then. You were young when you said it, AIDS monkeys, right? I don't know why you said it. I don't know why. Only you know why. And I believe in, you know, people growing up and gaining experience and kind of copping on to themselves. I certainly wouldn't condemn you for it. But on the flip side of that is that certain people might say, well, Richie, look, the fact is it was said, and, you know, why should I listen to this guy? Do you understand that?
Well, if I could go back in time, is that what you're asking? If I could
go
back
would you
in
say,
time,
don't say,
say
stuff like that and don't mean it?
Well, if I went back in time, I'd probably have two things to say to myself. Buy Bitcoin when it's $1 a coin and buy lots of them. And also, don't sell all those mint boxed computer games because they're worth quite a lot of money too now.
So you're being flippant.
They would
flippant
be my
now.
Two pieces of advice.
You're being flippant. That is amusing. And I accept that as amusing, but you're
no, that
being
is, flippant. That's genuine.
I know.
That's genuine. People make mistakes, and mistakes shape you as a
fair
person.
Enough.
It's not. I said it in a flippant way, but it's a serious point.
Fair
people
enough.
Do and say things when they're younger, and now I'm older. I can give people advice on that, and I learned certain things the hard way, but I learned them. And there are certain things you have to learn, and learning them the hard way is often difficult at the time, but it's for the best in the long run. And ultimately, I don't regret things. I might not say them now, but I'm not somebody who is racked with regrets. And the reason I'm not racked with regrets is because I'm actually quite happy with the person I am. And I wouldn't be the person I am today if I'd have done things differently.
Everything
some
changes.
People may say, oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's a cop out too. Well, it's not. That's my genuine opinion. I'm not an unhappy person. I am happy where I am. I've got a lovely partner. I've got a beautiful daughter. I enjoy doing what I do. And my experience have shaped me, but they've shaped me into, I think, a better person.
Yeah, and I've never cast any stones at anybody else's greenhouse because I've made 1,000 mistakes myself. And I don't think I'm a better man than you or anything like it. You said you wouldn't say certain things now. This is my final question on this, and then we're going to move away from it because I do want to make a case for Shamima Begum, just to wind you up a little bit for a minute. Not to wind you up, but just to make a point. You said you wouldn't say certain things now. Forget about that original comment. Is that because there are consequences for saying them or because you've grown up a bit?
I think there's always a better way to frame an argument. And I think things that you say when you're young, you often say them because you're trying to get a reaction or you're making a joke that people don't particularly understand or can be taken out of context. And obviously, as you grow up, you mature. But my views in terms of wanting to prevent the current demographic change that's taking place haven't changed. I've spent 20 years fighting against this demographic change, which by the 2060s will reduce white Britons to a minority in their ancestral homeland. I have stood consistently on that platform, and I will continue to do so until the day I die.
Yeah, nobody should have the right to deplatform you or ban you from any social networking site because of your opinions. And I know, as you know, as a guy who grew up in trade unionism, that there are a lot of people in working class areas. I'm a working class boy who would have voted on the left over the years. I've always been concerned about what mass immigration, unfettered immigration, would mean for their futures and the futures of their children. And back then, nobody was calling those people xenophobes or racist. Look, it's a really important discussion. That's why you're here. On the Shamima Begum thing, again, I've been around the block a long time, Mark. I've seen empirical evidence that ISIS were given life. Life was breathed into ISIS by Saudi Arabia, by the United States of America, by Britain, by France and by Israel. They're our bastards, these lunatics, these head choppers. And, you know, the fact that they were able to groom people here in the UK, again, that was facilitated by the intelligence agencies of the countries I mentioned. And Shamima Begum, whatever, however heinous it is to want to go to Syria or to Iraq to join up with that lunacy, was a child, was born in this country. I say get her back here, try and find out what went on, and allow her answer for herself here. I think she's entitled to that. But you strongly disagree with that.
I don't strongly disagree with that. That's your opinion. I think it's very interesting that the people who are calling for her to return are the same people that think that children, and when I say children, I mean prepubescent children, children sort of under the age of 11, children who wouldn't even be at secondary school have the right to choose their gender. So children who aren't at secondary school have the right to choose their gender, and they totally know what they're doing. But Shamima Begum, who was 15, didn't have a clue what she was getting into when she joined ISIS, totally a child, absolutely innocent and all this, and she should be brought home and we should hug it all out. I think she made a decision. I think the reason she wishes she hadn't made that decision is because ISIS didn't emerge victorious. If ISIS had have emerged victorious, which at one point that there was a likelihood of that, they were encircling Baghdad. And if they'd have taken Baghdad, there would have been potentially calls for Western leaders to get around a table and talk to these people because they'd have had that much power. Now, if that had been the case, do you think she would be wanting to come back, or do you think she would be waving a black flag now somewhere in Iraq and feeling absolutely justified in her decisions? Yeah. And that's a very important point, because if people do actually decide on a course of action, you have to then gauge what they're doing or the position they're taking on how that course of action worked out for them. And I don't think she'd be in any way remorseful had things worked out differently there.
That's interesting. Could it be argued, now, before we even consider what sort of impact on her mental state of mind being there might have had, because it's one thing to see stuff on television, Mark, and on liveleak.com and elsewhere. It's another thing to be there and to see these nutcases up close and personal. But could it also be argued, now I'm going to make this argument, that there are powerful people in this country that don't want Shamima Begum coming back and maybe telling tales about what was going on in those deserts and where Islamic State was getting its equipment and its lovely Toyota Land Cruisers and all the rest of it? Maybe there are people here very concerned about what she might tell us. That's a fair argument.
I don't think that's the case, because in a connected world as we live in today, she could tell us all that from where she is. I think that the Conservative Party make very, very token gestures to please a certain set of people. And they are making this gesture because it pleases and pacifies a group of people that want to believe that the Conservative Party are nationalistic. They want to believe that the Conservative Party have Britain's best interests at heart. And by doing something like this, it's Priti Patel and Boris Johnson's way of saying, look, we understand your concerns about immigration and about Islamic extremists. That, I believe, is the long and short of it. The Shamima Begum thing is nothing more than a publicity stunt by the Conservatives to essentially fool people in Labour heartlands who do have anti-immigration feelings, who are against demographic change, who feel there is a problem with immigrant communities and their beliefs. This kind of move by Boris Johnson's government is just a way to pacify those people. It's nothing more, nothing less. And I would say that if you spoke to Boris Johnson in private, I should imagine his opinion on this, were he not Prime Minister and were he not doing this right now, would probably be that she's British and she has certain inalienable rights to return here for some kind of fair trial.
Yeah.
I think if it was somebody like me who was saying that she couldn't come back, if that was my point and I was campaigning on that, I think he would be tutting. But instead, he's doing this as a publicity stunt.
He might very well be. Mark Collett is our guest, folks. Do check out the book, The Fall of Western Man. Mark heads up Patriotic Alternative these days. He's had a lot of censorship, it must be said, in recent months, but going back years, but recently being banned on pretty much all the major social media platforms. I would hope that whatever your opinion is of Mark and some of the campaigns Mark has been involved in, that you wouldn't want him banned from anywhere. I certainly wouldn't want him banned from anywhere, and he's always welcome to come on this programme. I want to talk to you, it's 22 minutes past six, by the way. I want to talk to you about something. I mean, you will have known that I was going to go down this road. Here we are now in what I believe to be totalitarian UK, in 2021. I'm not going to waste time going over how things are. You know, businesses forced to close down. People forced to commit economic suicide, financial suicide, for a respiratory infection that isn't dangerous to the vast, vast majority of people. It's tyranny. I can't think of any other way to describe it. And yet I can't help but say to you, my friend, and I've said this to other guests on the programme recently, I've been a student of identity politics for a long time now. And I believe that many of the things that we've seen happen over the years, you know, the culture wars that you and I have discussed many times, the so-called divide and conquer agenda, it's all been, I believe, to get us to a place whereby whatever we want to call these elites, whatever they are, whomever they are, whatever they represent, that they couldn't have done this unless people were divided along the lines of race, of colour, of creed, of sexual orientation. It might sound very simplistic, and you'll probably accuse me of oversimplifying it, but I believe that that's given them the check position. If this was a game of chess, they're in the check position now. And they are, because this agenda, coronavirus, where they want to take the world, the Great Reset, that impacts on every man, woman and child on planet Earth, regardless of what you look like or where you come from. And they've gotten away with it, I believe, because we, and by we, Mark, I mean me as well, I've been as guilty as anybody else, have fought with one another, I don't mean physically, but along these lines that have divided us, and we've played right into the hands of the people behind this agenda. What do you think?
I don't think that's got anything to do with it. I think what's happened here is people have been, over time, have been habituated into accepting a nanny state. They have been habituated into giving away more and more of their freedoms, being told that they must wrap themselves in cotton wool, that the government has the right to tell them how to live their lives. You must wear a seatbelt when you're in your car. You must wear a helmet when you're riding your bicycle or your motorbike. You must not do too much of this. It's illegal to do that. You have to do this specific thing with your children. You have to do this in your home. And slowly the nanny state has encroached on every aspect of our lives. And instead of us being free-thinking people, we're like children in a playpen with, instead of elected representatives, we have people who tell us how to live our lives. And we have been habituated to accept this. And this is the fruit of that. What we are seeing now is a population which is largely polarized. You have people who still value freedom. You have people who are out there and they are saying, you know what? My body, my choice. If I want to take the risk, I should be allowed to keep my business open. That is what a free country is. That is what freedom is. It is my choice. And then on the other side, you have a huge number of people who are like, oh no, we can't do that. We mustn't do that. The government is telling us no. And these people accept everything the government tells them and comply. And they all comply like children would. Like children would in the schoolyard or in a classroom, because they've been habituated to it. And a lot of these people actually enjoy living like that. They like having their decisions made for them. And I've seen this on social networks. I've seen this on Facebook. I've seen this on groups that my partner's part of, parenting groups, where she's saying, look, this is ridiculous. Why can't we all go and just sit in the park with our children? And people are having a go at her and saying, what do you mean? If people like you had stayed in all summer, we wouldn't be locked down over Christmas. You just must do as you're told. This is the mindset that is bred within people when you accept a nanny state and when you allow people who are meant to be representatives of you, elected representatives, to become basically your nanny or your teacher.
Good point, and yeah.
The media does this as well. I remember there was a guy, you probably remember him, Richie, because I bet you read the Daily Mail every day.
Gosh, I read everything. I do not just the mail, I read everything. Go on.
He was a big guy and he took his family to the beach. He was a big, tough, you know, working guy, probably some like a handyman or a builder. He looked tough, tattoos the lot. He was down on the beach, shirt off, at, you know, with his family and kids. And he said, look, this is all a load of nonsense. I'm a healthy guy. My kids are healthy. If I want to come to the beach, why can't I? And the media tore him to pieces. They made him out to be a fool. They called him a COVIDiot. Everything he said was true.
Yeah.
And why isn't his right? If it's a free country, if he wants to go and do that and take that chance, he can. And let's put it into perspective. In 2020, COVID killed just 388 people in England under the age of 60 with no underlying health conditions. You're more likely to be killed in a road traffic accident. So this guy was right in everything he said, and he was ripped down because it's not just the government and the establishment that's turned us into these babies, these drooling children who need their nappies changing by the government. The media have been in on this too. And at the same time the media was writing articles rubbishing these so-called COVIDiots for wanting to open their businesses and not comply, they were praising people for wearing two masks.
I know. Right, let me take that on, what you just said there. Can't disagree with the majority of that. Of course, you're right. The conditioning, turning people into the infantilization of people. Well said. You're absolutely bang on. I couldn't argue with any of that. In fact, I think we're both right, Mark. We're both right. And maybe we're overlooking the other's points. Maybe it's not a good thing. But what I mean by the divide and conquer agenda playing into that, I see hundreds. Now, this is daily. I see hundreds of tweets going back and forth between people and on Facebook, arguing over the rights and wrongs of lockdown. And I do see it coming down to political divisions. I do see it coming down to political divisions. Like those of us who see lockdown as insanity, because it is for all the reasons we've given. We're the Brexiteers, basically. We're the idiots who voted for the UK to leave the European Union. And, you know, the pro-Europeans are the sensible, smart ones. They're the ones who don't want to kill Granny. So both of us are right, I think. I think you can't over... I have overlooked maybe what you've been saying about the nanny state, and I see that you're right, but you can't equally overlook the fact that there is a political element to this. There is a culture war element to coronavirus. You know, the good people, you know, the lefties are on the side of let's protect 95-year-old Bert who's got diabetes. God love him, and he's half blind, and he still smokes 20 Winstons a day. You know, that's the right thing to do. The ones who want to open up, we're just heartless bastards. So there is definitely that divide and conquer playing into this whole coronavirus thing too, as well. But I take your earlier point.
Well, obviously, people do have different political affiliations. I don't really think that's divide and conquer. I think people have different opinions. They always have. You will always find that people disagree on things. What has changed is that people aren't allowed to disagree anymore.
Yeah.
And at one time, a conservative government, and this has to be stated because this is a major part of this unfortunate puzzle. Conservatives always stood for low taxes, low government intervention, and a greater amount of freedoms for the people, or they were meant to. That was meant to be the Conservative Party's stance. And here we have a so-called Conservative Party, which is in fact doing more to take away people's rights, doing more to institute a nanny state than any other government in the history of the UK. And something else you need to take on board here. We often talk about the ills of a monarchy, the ills of dictatorships. Power should not be concentrated in the hands of one man or one woman. It must be a democracy. Well, we live, apparently, in a democracy, yet here we are in a position where the Conservative government have afforded themselves more power than any monarch has ever had in the history of these islands. No monarch has ever had the power or the reach to tell people not to leave their homes,
yeah,
that they have to abandon their businesses, stay in their houses, and they have no rights whatsoever. No monarch has ever had that
power. Can I ask you personally,
Mark? This Conservative government does.
Has done it. Can I ask you on a personal level, how has it affected you, you know, the last 12 months, the last 13 months? How has it affected you, you know, financially? You don't have to tell me if it's too personal. But even emotionally. I mean, I found it very difficult at times to accept that it's happening, and also accept that there isn't very much I can do about it apart from interviewing scientists who disagree with it and such like. How have you dealt with it in the last year?
Well, I've got to say, it has really, really harmed the organisation that I founded with Laura Towler. It's harmed Patriotic Alternative because it prevents us from meeting. It's harmed particularly, I would say, the health of my young daughter, because when it comes down to it, I believe that very young children, my daughter's only 18 months, she used to be going to loads of classes. She was always out and about. We used to take her to soft play. I think for her at such a young age to be trapped inside endlessly, and really with, and it is endlessly, there is no real end in sight. And I know people will say, oh, we've got a roadmap now. But if you read the small print, if you look at the little caveats that Boris so cleverly put into everything he said, he was actually very, very careful to state that it may well be a fact that we're not coming out of this lockdown at all. He kept saying if, would, could, led by data, not by dates. He knows what he's doing. But I think it does affect people. It's affected people around me. I'm quite resilient. I really don't let things get to me at all if I can help it. I try just to crack on and make the best of everything. But I would definitely say for small children, and for mothers, because if you're a mum and you're bringing up a very small child, being in groups, especially breastfeeding groups, advice groups, they are a real lifeline for new mums. And I know, being a man, you kind of make the assumption that when a woman has a child, that breastfeeding is going to come absolutely naturally. It's going to be like a duck to water. But when you speak to many mums who have just given birth, especially for the first time, breastfeeding is actually quite difficult. And a lot of children don't take to it straight away. And it's groups like that, it's support groups that reach out and help thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people up and down the country that have been smashed apart by this. And it will have affected people's physical and mental health and broken them down. And I run a service as part of Patriotic Alternative where people, especially young men, email me with their problems, with issues they're going through. And I have seen a massive rise in people putting on weight, people turning to alcohol, people slipping into deep depression because they haven't got a job and they don't see anywhere out of this. I would say that from everything I've seen, that the health of the nation hasn't been helped by these lockdowns. It has been damaged by these lockdowns. And I believe that was by design. I don't believe that was by accident.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's where we come to talk about where this might go, this fourth industrial revolution. Let me remind our listeners, Mark Collett is on the programme. Mark is very, very well known and has been for many years. Do check out his book, The Fall of Western Man, whether you agree with it or not. It's a good read. It's very interesting. And he heads Patriotic Alternative these days. A lot of banning going on, of course, around the independent media and around alternative content or independent content creators. Mark's been banned from everywhere. And as he pointed out earlier on, not for breaking any laws. That's very important. We could do a whole show on big tech, but not today. So when we hear, I mean, the weekend was very interesting. You had the World Economic Forum. I know you'll be aware of this, even though you're banned from Twitter, or maybe you're not aware of it. But for a while anyway, the World Economic Forum had a tweet up there that said lockdowns have been good for cities. Until there was an avalanche of abuse directed towards that particular think tank, and they deleted the tweet. But this guy's name keeps coming up. I mean, I've read quite a lot of this stuff. It is very, very sinister. They want to use the pandemic or the scamdemic, as many of us have come to call it, to change the way people live and to transform societies. Mark, is this where it all goes? As far as you're concerned, do you join the dots and say yes, there is a determinable agenda now to basically turn on its head human experience, human existence? What do you think?
I think what we're seeing here is a massive power grab, but the massive power grab can't be seen as the be all and end all. We're also seeing a huge, huge transfer of wealth. And that huge transfer of wealth is from the average person on the street who has a little to the big, big industrialists, financiers, politicians, people at the top who have a lot. You are seeing small businesses destroyed. You are seeing people's livelihoods destroyed. And all of this is being concentrated into the hands of those who already have the most. So, for example, small businesses that were struggling to exist, they're gone. And who has taken their place, or who's taken their business, who's taken their wealth? Yeah. Well, it's Amazon.
Amazon
didn't need any more wealth. Amazon already had plenty, but they're getting it. Where have we seen? We've seen the high street all collapsing. Well, as the high street has collapsed, who has taken it? Well, it's these massive online retailers. We are seeing all forms of political activity completely dry up. And instead, political discussion is now completely concentrated on social networks. Again, another massive power grab and transfer of wealth towards a very small number of people. And as you're seeing this, you are seeing those who push back against this be completely destroyed, absolutely publicly torn down in every way imaginable and made to look as if they're completely insane and as if they're a danger to everybody else. But actually, when you look at what people are saying, it's common sense. Now, I am totally for saving the elderly. I don't want to see old people put at risk. But the fact is, we have to live our lives. And if old people are at risk from this, then they and they alone should be quarantined. Why should normal, healthy people lose their businesses, fall into ill health, end up on UBI, which is, it's another massive government scam. UBI is one of the worst things that anyone could end up on, because anyone that ends up on UBI basically has to give up everything they have. To be able to claim UBI, you have to have run down all your assets, all your savings to zero. Once you've run down all your assets and savings to zero, then you can claim. So basically what they're trying to do is ruin everyone, make everyone equally poor, and then throw them a few crumbs from the table every month that they will be able to spend with these huge businesses that have gobbled up the entire marketplace. And what makes this even more sick is these people already had so much. These people already had 90%. Did they need another 5-6% from the people with nothing? Well, any logic would say no, they didn't. But we're not talking about logical, decent people. We are talking about an evil internationalist clique that wants to own and control everything. And part of that ownership and control means stamping out freedom of speech and freedom of association and any form of rights that we once held.
This is what's fascinating about you. And however condescending this might come across, please don't take it as such. Because I don't believe myself to be the intellectual superior of anybody. I do not. We've all had our lived experiences. I listen to you, and I do sometimes catch your own podcasts. I do. And I find it fascinating how you can cut through the crap and you can see where all this is going. But you are reluctant, and I know you're going to say, well, I'm just saying that I want you to agree with me. I don't want you to agree with me, but you dismiss totally, you know, the idea that dividing us along the lines of our own identities paved the way for this to happen, paved the way for this to be a possibility in the first place. And I don't understand that. I don't think that I know more than you. I don't think that I'm right and you're wrong. But I know in my bones, Mark, that however we ended up on this earth, whether a creator exists or doesn't exist, I'm agnostic at the best of times, to be honest, but that we're all ultimately the same, regardless of what we look like or what God we pray to. And I am convinced, left and right are two cheeks of the same backside. Nothing will ever be achieved through politics. They are able to do what they are doing to us because we squabbled over stupid things for too long. Gods and demigods and skin colour and sexuality. I'm convinced of it. And I believe you dismiss that out of hand. Do you give any... Have you spent any time thinking or contemplating about that over the years?
No, I haven't spent any time thinking and contemplating.
Why
that,
not? I believe it as an intellectual, I'm surprised at that.
I believe we're all different.
I'm right and you're wrong, Rich.
And birds of a feather flock together. And I believe people who are vastly similar, people of the same ethnic group, people of the same religion, people who have the same culture, work well together in those groups, separated, largely separated from others, as we've existed for tens of thousands of years. Multiculturalism in the West began post-Second World War in earnest, and it accelerated from there so rapidly. I produced many pieces on this with all the facts in them. And when you look at before the Windrush, before the Second World War, there were so few people in this country who were different race, different ethnicity. That changed drastically post-Second World War. This is not something that's been organic. This is something that's been forced upon us by the same people who are doing what we're talking about today. The same people who forced multiculturalism upon us, who forced mass immigration upon us, are now forcing this lockdown upon us, are now taking away our rights, because all of this is part of the same thing. It's intended to destroy us. And I bear no ill will to anybody from different ethnic or racial groups. In fact, I have people from all over the world write to me on a daily basis. I speak to people from Nigeria. I speak to people from the Middle East. I speak to people from all over Europe. I speak to people from South America. And all of those people, despite their differences in ethnicity, say to me, Mark, you are right. We can all get on from a distance. We can all get on as long as we have our own place in the world where we are allowed to be ourselves and we don't encroach on each other. And I think that's a wonderful thing because I believe in human biodiversity. I don't believe that we should all be forced to live together in some multicultural melting pot. And I think that that has not only damaged people of European descent, and I unashamedly represent people of European descent, but I also believe it has harmed people of other ethnic groups as well.
Yeah, and I suppose it's the point that we'll always part I don't mean part company today, we've still got some time to chat. It's where we'll always part company. You know, as a young trade unionist, I understood what opening borders would do to working class people like me and my friends and my families. I knew it was a bad thing. Most old socialists, and by old socialists I don't mean social democrats, I don't mean Marxists, I don't mean communists, but I mean socialists, real socialists, of the Simon Bolivar brigade, never had any time for that, you know, for opening borders and putting that sort of pressure on the existing workforce. And I see all of that. But I think it's such a soulless thing, you know. You belong over there and we belong over here. I mean, I don't know what your faith is, Mark. It's none of my business, really.
Why is that soulless? Why would it be soulless for an Indian man to visit Britain and for it to be British, and then for a British man to visit India and it be Indian, or for a Japanese man to go to Pakistan and it be representative of the Pakistani people, and then for a man from Pakistan to go to Japan and say, wow, this is representative of the Japanese. I think it's more soulless to force us to live in one area, force us to adopt each other's languages.
That's where
and
I
culture,
agree with you.
And then overlay it with Coca-Cola International.
That's what I can't fault that. This is why I invited you on a couple of years back in the first place. You're right. You are right. I don't believe that, you know, it's very hard for me to put this into plain English, really. I get muddled when I try to explain how I see this. I agree with you. I don't believe that the majority... I mean, I've read Frank Ferrady's book, you know, the Essex lecturer, or is he in Kent University? I've had him on the programme some years back. You know, that minority cultures shouldn't take precedence over majority cultures in countries. I agree with that. I'll never disagree with that. I'd be foolish to say to you, you're wrong. Of course, there are huge problems inherent with that. But that was foisted on people. Again, that was by design. You discussed that yourself. That was by design. You know, they didn't just say, let's get a workforce in here after the Second World War. Let's get some people in here from India. Let's get some people in here from the West Indies. No, they didn't. They deliberately did it. And they deliberately ghettoised people in order to deliberately ferment that us against them, divide and conquer. That's how I see it. But I don't disagree with you when you say it's wrong and it's problematic when you advance the rights of the minority over the majority. Of course I see the problems with that. I agree with more with you than I disagree with you. But I do think it's soulless, you know, to think, and I don't mean you're soulless, but the idea that they belong over there and it's fine for them to visit here, but they should never come and live here. I don't agree with that, to be honest, personally.
Well, as I said, I believe that Britain should be... I'm not calling for a 100% white Britain. One thing that people regularly say is patriotic alternative Mark Collett and Laura Towler call for a 100% white Britain. We've never called for that. We call for a Britain that is overwhelmingly ethnically British. So let's say, for sake of argument, without splitting hairs, 95%. And we believe that that is a reasonable call to make. We are not calling for 100% white Britain. We are not calling for forced repatriation. We understand people have lived here for many years, and some of them have done their very best to fit in and have made done a damn good job of it. But the fact of the matter is, we are seeing a situation now. I covered a piece on my Telegram today. You can follow me on Telegram because I'm not on Twitter. But here's an interesting piece of information. White British children are now officially a minority in state-funded nurseries in the UK. Our children are already a minority. We will be a minority as a whole by the 2060s, if things carry on as they are doing. That is not a small number of people coming here trying to fit in and a mix that can be sustainable. That is a wholesale replacement and displacement of an ethnic group, thanks to an internationalist clique which is pushing for the destruction of people of European descent.
That, the weaponized immigration or the weaponized migration agenda. A lot of people listening to this program will have sympathy with that. But I'll put it to you, and I will, of course, as always, give you the final word, and I won't editorialize after you've gone. I never do that either. But I hear what you're saying there, and I understand why you feel as you do, and I have sympathy with it up to a point. Empathy, sympathy, whatever way you want to say it. But the problem you are going to have, not just you, and not because of your past or because of the bad press that you get, but other nationalists like yourself, the problem you're going to have is, I don't think there is any way that you can discuss this or have this conversation without minority groups thinking that they're basically coming under attack or that they're being scapegoated. Because you said yourself, it isn't the doing of ethnic minority groups. It isn't their doing. There isn't a group of Muslims or a group of Sikhs or a group of Poles or a group of Romanians who decide, let's go and conquer Britain. It isn't. It's about something far more deep, and you've described it very well. It's not the doing of the groups who come in here from parts of the Middle East that have been destroyed by weaponry that was made in this country and given to lunatic head choppers like ISIS. So the point I'm making, I'm taking too long to make it, is that you'll never get people... I don't think you can engage with people because they'll feel they're being attacked. They don't... It doesn't occur to them, or you can't convince them that you're talking about an international cartel or globalists. For minority groups, it will always be the case that we're being scapegoated again for the problems of people in this country. What do you think?
Well, That may be the case. We do have many people, an unpatriotic alternative, and I speak to many people from other ethnic groups that actually agree with what I'm saying, because they, some people who came here in good faith, came here because they wanted to live in a white majority nation. And they wanted to remain a white majority nation because that's what attracted them to the UK. So there are people who agree with us. But if some people don't want to listen to me, and if this does in some way turn up the noses of people from ethnic minorities, well, so be it. The important thing is I am going to carry on spreading this message. I'm going to keep standing up for people who are the indigenous people of these islands, because no one else is. The fact of the matter is there is a group that stands up for black people, for Muslims, for Jews, for homosexuals, for transgenders. Who is standing up for the straight, white, traditionalist Britons, the people who built this country? There's no one. And there's no one doing that, because anyone that does is shot down by the media and the establishment. So I am being that person. And if that upsets somebody, so be it, because I can't just let my people become a hated minority in their own country.
Well, it doesn't offend me, and you're welcome to come back anytime you want, mate. You know that. What's the website for Patriotic Alternative? Because there will be people listening to this, and they'll have an opinion of you based on what they've read in the press. Where should they go to find out more, Mark?
You can find more at www.patrioticalternative.org.uk, and you can also find me, just one final thing, I'm on Gab, I'm on Telegram, I'm on BitChute, I'm on Odyssey. Ultimately, that's where you have to find me these days. And I've been deplatformed, and I genuinely appreciate anyone who just gives me a follow on any of those platforms. It really, really does mean a lot to me. And thank you so much for having me on, Richie. It's been a really enjoyable evening.
Thanks for your humility. I should have mentioned at the top of the programme, Mark was due to be on last week and the week before, but for various reasons, I screwed up. And there was no diva hissy fit from the boy Collett. He just got on with it, and he's here tonight. So I'm grateful to you for that. Thanks for coming back. And the door is open, mate. Come back anytime. You know that.
Thank you so much. Have a nice evening.
Cheers, Mark. You too. Mark Collett then on the Richie Allen Radio Show. He had the last word. As I said, I like to do that. That's about it for the programme today. I've had a mad programme because Paul Ripley, my engineer, the man that is Paul Ripley, the man with the plan, he said to me today, I need to do things a bit differently in studio for my own health and safety, namely for my own ability to hear things going forward. You know, I'm a guy who's been in radio studios for many years, and also many nightclub DJ booths. I can never say words ending in THS. And anyway, I was using cans, headphones that I shouldn't have been using, even though I had some very expensive old radio studio headphones here, and he's insisted that I do it properly. And I've been working tonight in a manner that I've never worked before, using different type of headphones. The sound setup is all different, and I'm struggling to get used to it, but it's been a bit fun, actually. It's been a bit hairy, but I'm grateful to Paul Ripley and to FabRadioInternational.com for looking after me as he did today. Now, I will be joined on the programme tomorrow by June Murray, at the very least. I'm looking forward. Excuse me, it's Jean Murray. My God, it's Jean, who I know and I have known for some time on Twitter. She's a blogger, very good writer, Irish lady, and is going to be on speaking with me tomorrow. Later on in the week, Spiro Skouras will be back on the programme, and I have other guests booked in, but as usual, the diary isn't at arm's length. I didn't upload any articles to richieallen.co.uk today. I didn't do that because I was up to my tonsils, but there will be articles on the website tomorrow. Do stay in touch with richieallen.co.uk. I'm very proud of the website, and I like putting articles on there. I will continue to do that in the coming days. Going out of this programme with this from Bruce Springsteen. I love this, from his most recent album, which is entitled Letter to You. This is a song called House of a Thousand Guitars, and it's pretty brilliant. Alrighty, enjoy the rest of your Monday, and take care of yourselves and one another. Speak tomorrow. Bye now.